If it is Friday, must be Techie Talk time, and son of a gun it is. Hey, Techie, how are you?
Hey, Joe, good to see you. The month is just about over, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, actually, next time we talk, it'll be March.
I know, like everyone else watching this, while closing in a full year of living in a pandemic world, and the BioGen conference was actually this week. If I remember correctly.
Yeah, I think it was today. It was the 1 year anniversary. Like it was a good thing.
Yeah, no, this is not the type of anniversaries I really want to have flowers and cakes. Although, given the pandemic, I've been eating more cake, so I don't know what to say.
Everybody's looking for some comfort food, I think, for sure.
Desserts now. Yeah. This may not be good for me in the long term.
But as you mentioned, we're approaching the 1 year anniversary of the state of emergency, and we're also approaching the last phase of reopening that the governor talked about earlier this week. Do you think it's safe?
I think there's a degree of safety here that is able to be achieved if, again, as I keep repeating myself, everyone in the public follows the guidelines. Wear a mask, sanitize, if not feeling well, avoid people if possible, as well as taking all the necessary precautions they have to going into vaccination. The economy continues to be something that is dependent on us as individuals to follow these guidelines. And people who continue to not wear masks, not to try to avoid people if they're not feeling well, to not wash their hands and maintain good hygiene, is a problem. And going forward, for the phase reopening to work well, is going to rely on vaccinations. And we've talked about this before, about herd immunity. And there's still this myth going around, folks, that herd immunity can achieve without vaccinations by us running around. The short answer is, you know, look at any other major pandemic in the planet. Generally, a lot of people die first before enough people evolve, hopefully, a high degree of antibodies to resist, and then future generations learn from the prior generation, basically becomes encoded in us to produce these antibodies against, you know, a major disease. I don't think anybody is interested in watching a massive high death count or people suffering severe illnesses or having overrun the hospitals to achieve herd immunity. Right now, the scientists believe that about 60% plus of the population needs to be vaccinated to achieve herd immunity for COVID-19 based on its current spread rate. The real question becomes, if these variants spread rates are significantly higher, you're talking about 40 to 70%, depending on which news article you read. Now, if that is confirmed a definite number, they can figure out what that percentage of infection is high, what the increased spread rate is. That could change the spread rate, I'm sorry, the vaccination requirement rate to beyond 60%. This is not just a domestic issue. This is a global issue. As every country in the world, scientists are trying to figure out, you know, collectively, what is the right number to try to get to herd immunity, and what is our risk tolerance for not getting to that number. So, for example, measles is one of the highest infectious things on the planet. I mean, it's like 12 to 15 people per person infected. That herd immunity number was well over 90%. Mm. Because it's moved so quickly that the people that are not vaccinated were not shielded because of herd immunity by others. And there's an introduction person that does not have vaccination catches the disease. If it's so highly contagious, it can move quicker than it being isolated by those people that have herd immunity to another person that hasn't been vaccinated.
Right.
And just move faster through the non-vaccinated population.
Yeah, and these variants are much more contagious.
Yes, and it's actually very important for us to continue to try to isolate these variants. And the reason is because they're mutating inside your body. So unfortunately, sometimes nature becomes more efficient in what it does. And the viruses can become more efficient at destroying your cells and killing you as a result of cell destruction. So if more people are vaccinated quickly, and this is, again, a supply chain problem with vaccines, but if you got vaccinated quickly, ahead of the mutations occurring, then the virus has nowhere else to go. Mm-hmm. And the mutations can continue if the virus is so contained that it has no host to jump to.
Right. That's the idea. Just corner it and snuff it out, hopefully.
Yeah. So hopefully, and if people continue not to, you know, do things like have large gatherings at home, or, you know, try to, you know, and, you know, realize that this is an asymptomatic disease and the spread rate is largely caused that way, but we can slowly ease into phase four. But as people have seen, if the infection rate spikes, like we did post Thanksgiving holiday, you know, the governor will most definitely roll back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, there are different steps even to phase four. It's not like just full blown reopen. It's a gradual method.
Well, I think the first real test of full blown opening is going to be the Boston Marathon in October.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not anticipating any massive graduation. I'm sorry, not graduation. Graduation is going to be a problem. You know, they're going to try to do some graduation events because we had that little mini super spreader opportunity last summer in high school graduation. If people remember that story.
Yeah, it was a close call for sure. Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, you don't need close calls because too close, especially nowadays, we're getting closer to the end. We're trying to avoid going back to the beginning. But I mean, I just don't see us doing like a giant festival or parades again to 2020. Two, depending on how vaccination goes, I do think that we're going to be more ease of travel, but I suspect there's going to be some verification of vaccination on certain types of travel, especially anything in closed containers. I do believe that that overseas is going to be a major problem.
Mm.
Because all countries are vaccinating at very different rates. They all have very different capacity to buy vaccine. This is such a dangerous disease in terms of spread speed and undetectability on spread that, you know, first world nations really have to look at donating vaccine once we reach a certain level of comfort to poor nations because of global travel.
People, right. You'll just be basically buying insurance to protect yourself by doing that.
Yeah, because there's going to be always be a percentage that we're not going to get to because they won't get vaccinated. And those people, the ones that don't get vaccinated, will be the next carriers.
Yeah.
And it's still a question about whether or not you can be a carrier. So, you know, just because you're infected doesn't mean that, and you got vaccinated doesn't mean you can't be a carrier. So for your example, you know, we were talking a little earlier about a friend of mine who's well into his senior years, but getting infected after vaccination because it takes about 3 weeks for the vaccine to take effect. But, you know, also the fact that the vaccine eventually did work and did start killing off the virus, but a lot of damage was done on the way there, means that he was vaccinated and infected. So there's a lot of questions out there whether or not, how that would work, because how long would it take for your body to respond to the virus entry,
mm-hmm.
and off, and then you're no longer breathing out the virus. And again, remind folks, just because you're vaccinated doesn't mean you have this funny like hazmat suit on that you can't see.
Right.
You have the ability to have on your hands still the virus. For example, if you come contact with someone who is asymptomatic and you shake hands or the person sneezes or there's some kind of respiratory droplets or some form or on a smooth surface like stainless steel and you touch with your bare hands, you may be vaccinated, but you bring it home to other folks that may not be. And you don't know. It's not like I'm going to wear a vaccinated card, you know, on my shirt saying, okay, it's okay to touch me because I've been vaccinated.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think the public is going to go for that. And of course, there's still children because we know they carry, anyone who kids knows they carry a lot of germs, just the nature of childhood. But I mean, you know, the kids can be carriers even though they're not always having major infections.
Yeah.
So, you know, this public health awareness campaign regarding even post-vaccination is still necessary. And I hope people watching this do understand that, you know, this isn't, this is science, not magic, right? So, you know, the virus still floats around us because it has a good lifespan once it leaves people's bodies. And you can still be a carrier despite vaccination. So you have to still a degree of caution as we continue to increase the vaccination. We shall see how this plays out.
Mm-hmm, yeah, mm-hmm.
I have a hard time seeing full-blown openings until herd immunity is achieved, depending on what that vaccination percentage is.
Yeah. Speaking of, the governor took some heat from the legislature this week about the state's vaccine website. Were you part of that discussion?
No, actually, it was a little tied up yesterday. I had to take my mom. For those who know in the audience, my mom's over 75 years old and has cancer. So, you know, I was doing her vaccination shot yesterday at Tufts Medical Center. Because they didn't use the state website, we decided hospital was safer. And the governor announced this caretaker thing after the fact. Obviously, I did not get vaccinated. I'm probably going to get vaccinated through Atrius Healthcare. It was my primary. They've already sent out notices that they'll be receiving limited doses down the road, and they'll be doing prioritization based on the state guidelines. So they're telling us to stay tuned as well.
Yeah.
Don't come rushing at them, is what they're saying. We'll let you know as their patient.
Okay.
So why did I say that? Well, the governor's website failed yet again. Well, other folks who are getting limited doses for their patients and letting them know not to rush them. This time out, I believe it was about 50,000 doses available. I've had friends text me all day yesterday about this. So in case you people in the audience do not realize, I do get people telling me, trust me, friends will tell you if there's a problem, and they're not shy about it. But they understand I don't have any direct control over this. It is a fair administration. The legislature is not a participant in the decision.
You're like their bartender, Tacky. They're just somebody to vent to.
They get vented to, and they know that I'm not in charge of these decisions.
Right.
You know, all you can do is bring back the problem to somebody else. But I'm like the bartender, you know, I can't bring it back to their bosses, and there's no extra tip.
But I mean, what do you think about the website, I guess, fiasco? You know, I mean, some people were getting told wait times were up to 4 months long.
Yeah, like the 8,000 minutes or something on a screenshot.
Yes.
I'm not sure what the thought process is. I think the idea was that they were trying to create two layers. They're trying to not overwhelm the scheduling system. So it would be kind of like a two-door step. They have a big enrollment book and wait in front of, and it's through a very small funnel. So you're trying to get through a very narrow, very small number of doors of a whole lot of people, but as opposed to everyone trying to cram through those few doors, they figure that they'll create a bigger room. And that's the only analogy I can think of. It's a bigger room with less doors to get another room with even less doors.
Right. Yeah. So instead of getting stuck in line, you're stuck in the room with everybody else.
You're stuck in the room to get to the door, to get your schedule.
That's what it was, just to add some layers and basically of wait time. Yeah.
It's worse than Disney World park ride wait time. You know, it's a problem like that. I mean, you know, I already watched some of the news clips. I listened to a small portion of it yesterday when I was trying to take phone calls. The problem is this. Still working very much off my phone. So I'm doing phone calls all day. And, you know, they're like, you know, the company's like, oh, you should have bought our expanded product. I'm like, what expanded product? And why didn't the governor buy the expanded product?
Right.
One of the challenges that people got to watch that is under this kind of video format we're doing here. Public hearings is much longer to do. And it's actually much less impersonal. So it's very hard to gauge the room, so to speak, with a lack of ability to read body language properly. And, you know, I had conversations with Chairman Driscoll, who's in Milton, that we talked about leading this task force, the speaker entrusted him with, and I actually got to call Dan Hunt, who chairs a COVID-19 federal assistance component review at some point, and chat with him about this. But I mean, this format is tough, and trying to get good Q&A, reading body language. I mean, through this, I don't know if people know this, but I do talk with my hands, but because of the camera, my hands are always down here, right, moving around, where you can see a glimpse every so often. So it's not like I'm gonna stick my hands right here to continue my animated conversation.
Right.
And this is kind of part of what's lost in the translation, so to speak, in this kind of format. And for committee members to digest information quickly and then ask, spitfire, so to speak, questioning from the bench, because they're starting to figure stuff out as they go. You know, here you gotta wait till people finish, you know, unmute, remute, and then you kind of lose that momentum.
Yeah, it's very tedious. I agree. You're more concentrating on the process than the content.
Yeah, And if you're directing traffic as a chair, as I like to call it, you got to be able to recognize members, make sure you don't interrupt people. There's all that kind of decorum that I think people realize is that the chair has to do beyond just pay attention. You have to keep an eye on the time, who's speaking, keeping notes, what's going on, be able to ask intelligent questions, coordinate with your co-chair, and coordinate with your members, and try to keep people from speaking over each other.
Yeah.
People ask you the same question over and over again. The chair's job is like, you know, we've already beat this dead horse. Let's move on, folks.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And actually, this company that the state's using is doing similar websites for a bunch of other states. I looked them up, this Prep Mod. And we're not the only state, you know, that's using that company for their mass vaccination sites.
Yeah, I don't know what the track record is. I've not looked at their track record.
Yeah.
I'm sure we can find it if we go do a little quick search. But I mean, I still find it very confusing because there's plenty of private sector software out there. I mean, you know, Ticketmaster is designed to deal with this kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Amazon handles millions of transactions a minute.
Yeah, all simultaneously. I mean, I'm still under the philosophy that what should have done was a massive sign-up sheet that the state could have collected and coordinate that way. And then they could put that information to the mass vaccination system. And then people will call you if they wanted a vaccine. Right. I would suspect that a lot of the medical centers are going to be moving that direction now too, where you can sign up ahead. They will contact you when available. If you somehow get vaccinated other means, you just politely say no and just keep moving up. And I do understand that everybody has a primary care doctor that's in a doctor's group. I do understand that. I do understand certain individuals do not have access to regular health care, such as people that are homeless. I do understand that. But no, there's ways to address those folks through these mass vaccination clinics or mobile vaccination once we get to Johnson & Johnson, because that's what Johnson & Johnson's game changer on. You better do mobile vaccinations.
Oh, I hadn't heard that. That's interesting.
Because Johnson & Johnson doesn't need refrigeration.
Ah, okay. So they can go out into the communities and just set up basically a vaccination truck.
Yeah, you don't need the mega freezer for Johnson & Johnson. That's the key. One shot, no mega freezer. Yeah, the mega freezer is a barrier.
Right, so it'll be much more accessible.
Yeah. For remind folks, you know, Moderna and Pfizer requires advanced refrigeration. Well, Moderna does not require, you know, a science lab level freezer. I mean, super cold. It still requires a high degree of cold, which is why doctors, groups, and pharmacies are likely to want to have Moderna over Pfizer because they already have refrigeration qualities at that level.
Yeah, I know here in Quincy, Manit is using the Moderna vaccine.
Yeah, because they have the refrigeration technology. But
right.
Even then, you still need a steady temperature. So, I mean, it's like a refrigeration oven. You set the temperature and it stays there digitally.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't like home fridges where you kind of set cold or not too cold.
Right.
You have a thermostat in your fridge. And,
yeah.
You know, and every time you open
it. Varies, you know, 10 degrees one way or the other. Yeah.
No. These are high-tech fridges. And
right.
Pharmacies carry those too because they carry other medications. So, you know, that's why it's logical. So I think that's kind of the distribution infrastructure problem here, which again, the criticism of the governor, and rightfully so, is that why didn't we have a better idea of how to utilize our existing infrastructure on vaccine distribution? Again, if you need mega refrigeration for Pfizer, that means that you have a certain number of resources available in the healthcare and pharmacy businesses that you can say, hey, we can use these, we need to contact these folks and we have to figure out how to set this thing up, knowing that these are going to be mega code to begin with. Meanwhile, Moderna doesn't. So, okay, fine. We can find which areas have these other technologies that we can utilize. Right now, we know that. Now, let's talk about how we're going to schedule. Okay, fine. And then, you know, how we get to the population. How do we do that limited doses in the fairest way possible, knowing that no matter what you do, people are going to be mad anyway.
Right.
Because
that's people. How you know when you're doing something right is when not everybody is 100% pleased, you know you're doing something right. because that's not possible.
The funny thing is, that's the rule of compromise in politics until it's life and death. There's a break point. Life and death issues are kind of like moves out of that category.
Yeah, well, I mean, it really is, you know, squeaky wheel gets the oil, right? Pretty much.
Pretty much. But there should be, you know, a logic here. And, you know, and I don't know what it is, but I mean, you know, I've got complaints. Why can't the governor stick to the plan? Well, because the plan keeps changing because how much doses we get change,
right.
You know, is part of the plan. If doses change, the plan changes, unfortunately. And the governor, you know, didn't finish phase one. I don't think people understand that. Phase one is far from done.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look at the math of how many people in phase one and how many doses available, and we're already in phase two. Phase one isn't over. But you can't sit and wait around for phase one to get finished. If people voluntarily does not want to get vaccinated, that's a problem, because they're not going to sit around and wait for them to get vaccinated.
Right.
This is not a mandatory vaccination program, because it's not an FDA-approved project. It's only emergency use. So, I mean, if this was like mandatory vaccinations for entire sector of healthcare workers, for example, yeah, we'll get through phase one, because you know exactly what the numbers are and you get it done. But you can't sit around and wait for someone to say, well, okay, I'm okay with this vaccination now. I mean, that's not an option.
Right, no, you'd never move to the next phase if you did that, yeah.
That's exactly it. And this is what the governor's doing. He's trying to keep moving to phases forward as the doses come up, with the knowledge that not everybody's going to take the vaccine. And again, I mean, we've seen polling out there that shows up to 30% of healthcare workers may not want to take the vaccine.
Mm.
We've already know that through a lot of interviews that people in, especially in Black communities, do not want to take the vaccine. It's a trust factor. And I'm sure people watching this are saying, exactly, I'm not going to do that. I don't trust this. It's new technology. It happens so fast. Forth and so on. You could name any number of, you know, reasons why not.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And so, you know, you have to respect that. It's their body.
Yes. But I remind folks, there are mandatory vaccines. You know, mm-hmm. measles is mandatory. You get it as a kid. I mean, what we call lockjaw disease. I mean, you know, the tetanus shots.
Mm-hmm.
Those are mandatory in children, even though we're a bit older than the kids out there that get chickenpox vaccines. Because we had chickenpox.
Yep.
Kids don't get chickenpox. They get chickenpox vaccine as part of going to school now. So there are mandatory vaccines. But they haven't reached, this product is not a mandatory vaccine.
Right. It's just the speed more than anything people are most leery about.
That's correct. It's new technology. I mean, people say, oh, I don't want a dead virus in my body. Well, one, Moderna, Pfizer, Johnson & Johnson does not introduce dead viruses because it's mRNA. Technology is just introducing genetic code that
would have been the flu shot. Actually, is a dead virus.
Yes. Well, actually, that's moving. They're moving away from that too over time. But yes, flu shot's a dead virus. So, but then people are like, oh, I don't want to introduce this new mRNA technology. I'm like, oh my god, really? I mean, you know, you don't want a dead virus. You don't want a dead virus. Fine, which doesn't do anything to you anyway, because dead means dead. So, so then you don't want to have mRNA technology in you, which avoids the whole dead virus fear. Well, I don't want that because it's new technology.
Right.
So do you do not want to get sick? I mean, it's kind of like you reach a point of like, you got two technologies. If you want more traditional, half the world's going to be using that because places like China and others are using old technology because there's no refrigeration requirement. Or I'm sorry, minimal refrigeration requirement. It doesn't mean super refrigeration, no, old fashioned flu vaccine, which made it easier for a lot of first and one, what I call, you know, two plus world countries that have minimal healthcare systems with proper refrigeration to distribute that the same way as the flu vaccine.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We have this real super technology that we have in the US and now the EU on not actually have to use or cultivate viruses anymore that could be a danger to the public through basic gene splicing.
Interesting. In China, I just read an article this morning. They've got a real good handle on coronavirus. They opened up their movie theaters in China.
They did some of that about 3 months after Wuhan. Yeah, and they're now really kind of pushing the larger openings. They're taking a huge risk also because there are clusters going on all over the place. But unlike here, the contact tracing and their ability to be a military presence anywhere they want when they want gives them a bit of an edge.
Yes, everything is mandatory there.
Yeah, people, trust me, they're getting mandatory vaccination. It would not be a voluntary public situation, right? Because the military come knocking on your door.
Mm-hmm.
For the vaccination.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
They will. I mean, there are videos out there that the Chinese government rapidly took down of people being dragged out of their homes under the belief of COVID-19 positive in Wuhan.
Wow.
So, you know, they were so concerned that literally busted down people's doors and got them out of there. Now, I mean, they also did the same thing of amateur journalists in China. And arrest them for their reporting on the story before they started censoring this on their internet systems.
Yeah.
Whatever got leaked out before the Chinese government stopped it.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is part of why there's such a high distrust with the Chinese government about what's going on over there and whether or not know, they are really doing a great job on containment. I would think they have to be more honest because of the high risk factor globally for not being fully transparent. And the U.S. has been transparent to the world, as so has the EU, about this as much as we can, although Cuomo's in trouble because, once again, do not hide information from folks. Even if you're late, don't hide it. It just creates more distrust, you know, in government. And, you know, trust me, you think I trust government? I mean, I'm in government. I mean, you know, healthy cynicism, and people know me, I'm not a positive person. You know, healthy cynicism is not a bad thing, folks. It really is a good thing. When you get to full-blown distrust, then we got a big problem. And yes. I'm no different from anybody else. I'm entitled to my same opinion about government just because I'm in government. So, but yeah, I mean, this is a part of a huge transparency issue globally of all nations that we got to know what's going on. China and Russia are the two, you know, not the only two, but you got Iran and you got a few others out there that you're not quite, North Korea is another one. You're not quite sure what's going on.
Hmm.
I would think, you know, particularly with China and its status in the world, you know, would want greater transparency about what is happening, because they also very dependent on international travel too. They're probably going to be the only economy that's going to have a positive GDP next year, because they came out just barely positive last cycle because the internal market's so big. It's such a big middle-class market. They can kind of sustain themselves. But again, they're also a tourist country. They're also a country that requires international trade, mm-hmm. a big export country. There's a lot of borders around them that they have to trade with. China has to trade with Japan and Korea, and, you know, actually, believe it or not, the trade with Taiwan, despite people know the geopolitical problems there, you know, as well as all the Southeast Asian nations and Australia and the southern continent and India and so forth. So, you know, for them to have total border closure is the same problem we're going to have and experiencing now. So even though it is the second biggest economy, it doesn't mean that they don't suffer the same economic effects as a globalized economy does.
Yeah.
Globalization is not as simple as job shipped overseas. It's called traveling someplace else to spend money.
Right. Yeah.
So if you don't believe in globalization, then don't go anywhere.
I think there's going to be a glut of pent up travel demand eventually. I don't know when, but I think eventually.
Well, it ain't healthy for me to look for vacation spots I can't go to. Put it that way.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you know, mental health is suspect on my side because I'm looking at places like I can't go there, but the prices are great.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Now they're great, of course. Yeah, because nobody's going anywhere. It's all about supply and demand, right?
It is. And the airline industry is going to have some interesting questions because one of the reasons they pack airplanes so full because airplanes are expensive mm-hmm. to put in the air. The question is, are they going to, as you've seen in the news, they're still packing planes. But, you know, as we move forward, even with some of you've heard immunity, you know, for comfort of international travel, are people going to wait, especially international travel, on arrival through an extended health check process to yeah. travel? And I will tell you that, yes, I think people will put up with it coming in or going out of the country where, you know, where they have to have a certification of vaccination and when it happened. Would it be a universal document agreed by the world on what a certification document looks like? You know, will you sub yourself to an infrared scan for temperature check? And, you know, let's be honest. I mean, rapid COVID-19 technology is here, and it will only get better as time goes along.
And the Quincy Public Schools right now, actually, the rapid test, yeah.
Yeah, and a home test kit has been FDA approved out of Australia, and there'll be more home test kits coming. Sure. So there'll be more and more tests coming out. Now, I do believe that because the COVID-19 variants is still basically the same thing, it's just in the same family structure. You know, the test kits should be very effective for now on the variants because they're not playing hide. These viruses aren't playing hide and seek. They're playing right. kill and destroy.
Right. Yep.
So the test kit should keep able to pick up this type of virus for some time until, and I'm sure when the virus changes and starts playing hide and seek, they'll adjust the test kits.
Yeah.
Because the test kits only work because they look for this. Test kits work because they look for the specific virus. They're not designed to like look for everything. It's like, well, we only want to find one thing. If it shows up, that's what we're looking for.
Sure.
So I'm sure the test kits will continue to evolve. But right now, it seems like to me, based on what I'm reading, that the virus is going to be more efficient at killing, destroy, and hide and seek.
Yeah, we don't even know if we'll need booster shots for a COVID-19 vaccine. We just don't know right now.
Agreed. And that's going to be an interesting question about, once again, travel, right? Should we, you know, should we have a verification of booster shots and are basically a type of medical record that's globally accepted by all governments, particularly on entry into country? Will it be an extra document to carry your passport? You know, does it change how global entry works? People use global entry at the airport. You pay $100 for 5 years. I have to renew actually this year, which is going to be kind of a waste of money because I'm not going to be able to use it. But it allows you to, you know, go to the through accelerated review process on entry. You know, will that slow down accelerated process? Let's say, will people willing to wait? Is the question.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think if you're not a frequent traveler, you know, it's something special that you do. Yes, I think you would. If business travelers, I don't know. That might be a different story.
No, I agree. Time is money, as we know. And, you know, I'll be willing to wait because I'm so desperate now. let's call it what it is, because I'm desperate. I mean, everybody's been working hard. I understand. I'm very believe me, I understand. I mean, I don't have kids and stuff. But, I mean, I got everybody in the little brother chasing me nonstop, pandemic. Sadly, you know, this is, as I once stated many years ago, it's a bit, I'm in the business of meeting people. Unfortunately, the drawback is that more people, you know, pass away.
Right.
And pandemic has proven that to me more than ever, that me being in the people business also has an other side. More so than I think some other industries and professions. Yeah, it's been wearing. It's been wearing 12 months. Yeah. So, physical too.
But. Is state government still happening, Jackie?
It's still happening. Government is open, but it's changed. I was talking to one of my lawyer friends on how even the court system has some way adjusted to video-based court systems while meeting the jurisprudence of the law. And some ways it seems more efficient. Because you don't have to travel to the courthouse on civil cases. It actually moves certain things faster. Although, make sure you do turn off the cat image when you Zoom. People sort of look it up if you don't know the story about that.
That's a great story, yes.
There has been technical difficulties. No one has been bold enough to put all of those technical difficulties on Twitter.
Right.
But, you know, people are adjusting. You know, same thing in government. We're still running rotating crews through offices as opposed, you know, not filling to maximum capacity. I think certain aspects of government will be remote, just like other white collar jobs that need to be, that can be remote, which is still why I still operate in the perception that Boston will see a 30% reduction in workforce entry, meaning workforce showing up at work in Boston. I think it's going to huge dramatic change in the economy. State government is one of the biggest employers in the state. We're 50,000 people, well over 50,000 people, not including contractors. So in the contractors, there's only like 15,000 folks. You know, the fact that certain white collar and so-called jobs of the state government probably can go remote, or we may do rotating shifts,
right,
which alleviates the need for us to keep looking for new office space. So like at the state house, we're still trying to migrate on it. As remind folks, I'm on a old cell phone that's been discontinued to do video calls while having my other cell phone, which is not in front of me. I don't know where it went, actually. I'm looking around, where did my cell phone go? You know, we're looking at moving to a more remote technology too. We got Microsoft 365, but eventually we're going to get mobile devices as well. So we can do rotating shifts. And now we're thinking about whether or not, you know, we can do remote testimony, even with in-person testimony, and how would we logistically do that if you're, let's say, lives 5 hours away, or you're an out-of-state person that wants to testify in-state, you know, as opposed to having traveled to Massachusetts, you could submit testimony through this medium that we're using now.
Yep.
And how we would blend that into a live public hearing with this. I don't know yet, but I mean, we believe the technology is there, just doing the
Well, I think some public schools are kind of doing that now with, you know, having in-person classes also shown remotely.
Well, you can have guest speakers, for example. Well,
that's exactly right, from different fields and different areas of the world, for that matter, yeah.
Yeah, you still lose, like I said, the body language component as I'm moving
my
hands up on the screen to show I do have hands. But still, yeah, this, in other ways, does create a vast opening of opportunity. So, you know, in state government, you know, there's things are always going to have to be in person no matter what. You know, verification of identification in person in certain instances, processing certain types of exams. But there's going to be a continued shift to go to this more kind of technology-based stuff that doesn't require as much in-person as needed. Like a jury trial is going to be interesting. I know the courts have been trying to figure out how to do six-person jury trials because there's a sequester component. You got to be able to interact with each other. You have to all be hearing the same thing, same time, right, at the same time. And of course, you're not supposed to have outside information influence your decision. So there's those things that still they're trying to figure out. You know, people still need to, you know, go take their driver's permit test, right? I mean, you know, we're going to rely on people doing it online. Probably not a good idea.
Yeah, no, there are things that have to be done in person, yeah.
Yeah, certain things will be in person. And, even swearing oaths of office, I mean, requires signature in the open office books. But, I mean, a lot of stuff has already been electronic filing anyway. A lot of documents electronic filed. You can mail in documents. Mm-hmm. But I think one thing that's going to people are going to have to kind of tolerate a bit is speed. There's some advantage to in-person processing versus mailing or emailing, then wait for receipt, then wait for confirmation, then respond to confirmation. You know, there's that still, you know, in-person requirement to check documentation that isn't doing it in front of you. It's going to have to like tell you later they've checked it. You got to wait for it to happen.
Right. Yep. So there's a delay with that. Sure. Yeah. It's going to be interesting for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to have to live with change, and some of this change is going to be permanent, whether how we go get our groceries. You know, once again, I did not understand how great BJ's curbside was until this. I do not have to hurt my back trying to pick up a large chunk of water off the floor. The kid will bring it out to my car and put it in my car for me. And I'm like, oh, my God, where, why have I not done this before? Yes. My back is so much happier. And you're like 19, and you're strong. It's great
for my that's right.
there's that component that I think people are going to start to accept. Like Speaker already announced this week's caucus, mail-in ballots are going to happen. He's going to push for permanent mail-in ballots.
Yeah, I know here in Quincy, at least the mayor is not fond of having that for municipal elections.
Well, I mean, we got to do something soon because the town elections are coming up. And many towns in the state have their elections in the March and April period, and that's going to need to get ready for it. And I think they're getting ready for mail-in ballots, as you speak. There's going to be able to give the green light by the law to do so. So expect us to move a bill on that fairly soon, and both branches to send to the governor.
Yeah, the state pay for it, I guess, is the question.
Yeah, I know. We got to figure that out as we go along. But you're right. We got to figure that part out, too. As we saw last time when mail-in ballots, you know, it was not cheap because they got to mail the applications. The state did pick up those costs. They, you know, pick up the cost in return and pick up the cost on send out. As we get better at it, the postage cost is, you know, it's bulk postage. So it is what the cost is going to be.
Right.
But I mean, the thing is, it went fairly smoothly and the process can be replicated. Then the cost should be fixed. You know what the cost is going to be, mm-hmm. as you get better at it. So we know what the budget will look like. You know, the mayor's election is going to be in November on the cities that have election cycles this year.
Yeah, there's no mayor's race this year, but there's everybody else's up, yeah.
Yeah, it changes how campaigning works. Mm-hmm. I mean, one issue is, of course, is delay. I mean, people are very concerned about delay. We saw this throughout the country about the delay of final results where mail-in ballots are counted. We do that here anyway. You know, absentee ballots are counted mm-hmm. the day of the election. We just never had that many before with the pandemic. And, you know, even my elections have to wait a period of time for the official overseas ballots counts to be done. So, you know, that's that there. The difference is here is that we want to let you know you have the opportunity to vote. That's mm-hmm. why we see the form. You want to vote by mail or not. And then you can choose whether to participate in the program or not, essentially, and how to vote.
Right.
I can see some of the concerns at a local level. I mean, you're right. It's extra cost. Okay, well, we can discuss how to deal with that extra cost, you know, but the idea that that this is going to be somehow like a major burden, well, we already had a test run last year. I mean, it worked okay in Massachusetts. The margin error is extremely small.
Yeah, Quincy actually was held up as a state model for it. And I know the city clerk participated in a kind of a task force with the Secretary of State's office to, you know, talk about what worked and what didn't.
Yeah, so, I mean, the mayor may have concerns about it, but it isn't an operational issue.
Mm-hmm. No, it's I think a cost issue and, you know, maybe a moral issue too, I guess.
Cost issues are relevant. Be able to figure it out, right? So, you know, is there a price on votes, so to speak? And, you know, we're spending a lot of money on things like hand sanitizers and all this other stuff as part of voting processes. And some governments, you know, went as far as, you know, to really super sanitize people going in, out, sideways. A lot of people brought their own pens that went to vote in person.
Yep.
You also, people go to polls, notice that the poll workers are not young people.
That's right.
They're high risk, vaccinated or not, still high risk categories of exposure. So mail-in voting will also reduce that impact in those areas. And there was discussion about, do you need to close schools? You know, because a lot of voting places are part of schools. And like O'Brien Towers in Germantown is a senior housing complex that's a polling location.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in 1000 Sudden Lottery has been a polling location in the past. So that's senior housing complex for beyond just their own building. They used to have other people come in and vote. And now they just do their own building. But, you know, that's a question too, right? I mean, you know, continuation of exposure, even though there's vaccination. Because again, not everybody's going to get vaccinated. So there are a lot of people that won't do it, and that's going to be a problem.
Right.
But I mean, we proved it worked, and the public likes it. I like it. It would change how people campaign. It would change how you do campaign identification. There's nothing wrong with that either. I mean, my precincts keep changing around. It's going to change around once we actually get census numbers. We're going to have the city's going to change the precinct lines because that's what happens first. I do not get to vote on city precinct lines. Let me make this clear again. This happened 10 years ago. This is why I keep saying this over and over again. I do not get a vote on your precinct lines. Do not call me if you do not like your voting location. That's your city council's problem.
Right.
Okay. I use their lines to draw my lines. So I don't get a choice if you're in my district or not. All right. I only have to use the lines they give me. So I don't expect my precincts to change. I live against the ocean. There's nowhere for me to go. So my district is not like other inland districts. They're going to have a whole lot of changes going
on. Right. Yep.
So if there's a change out of my district, it's because the city moved your precinct line. Because I'm doubtful my precincts are going to go anywhere.
I don't know if there'll be a lot of changes, actually. I was reading an article recently that not a lot of people are moving right now. There's not a lot of housing inventory. You know, people are kind of staying put at the moment.
Agreed. It's really the new development in the last decade. As we've seen Quincy Center, you know, Quarry Street, Quarry Street, yes. And down up in the Crown Colony.
Mm-hmm.
Did housing development down there. So those are new housing developments from 10 years ago. So yeah, there isn't a lot of movement moving housing, but there is new development.
True.
So, you know, Marina Bay is in a location. So it changed the precinct lines because of density issues.
Yes. Yep.
But you're right. I mean, in terms of legislative districts, I mean, maybe I'll lose a district. Maybe I'll lose a precinct. Maybe not. It's kind of a question mark.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, you know, if you're like, you know, the speaker or Bruce Ayers, your districts are has other communities in them,
right?
Which doesn't have the same population shift increases Quincy will show.
Right. Yeah.
So maybe they might have some border changes in those neighboring communities. Mm-hmm. They can shed a precinct off of one of those areas. If the city's population really has grown that much compared to Weymouth and Holbrook and Randolph. So, but you know, things will change, and you know, mail-in ballots are the public likes. So I fully expect it's going to be a permanent part of our society as we talk about things changing in the future. And how you go doing outreach to folks and how you meet people has already changed. I mean, I did a Zoom call yesterday with the South Shore Young Democrats. I will admit sitting for 2 hours is not easy. Again, they talked about organizing my public hearings, try not to do long public hearings because of the...
Right.
Kind of format. At least here I'm talking to you, interacting with you. Really, it's another thing when you're just sitting there on a camera for 2 hours where everybody can see you.
And you're just doing your monologue, basically, yeah. And you don't know if they're listening to you or if they're got their headphones on listening to music or something.
Yeah, at least this format, there's an engagement. We could do this from like, you know, we do this for 30 minutes to an hour, depending on the time of it, you know, we have time that day.
Right.
This is an easier interaction. But, you know, if you're one of dozens of people or hundreds of people sitting and you must be on camera because in politics, the optics is poor if I ever leave my camera. But what if I have to go to the bathroom? No one knows I'm going to the bathroom.
Right. Yeah.
It's not like, you know, I mean, I don't want to sit down and start typing into the chat box, going to bathroom, BRB. I mean, seriously. You know, and then I have to like unclick the video and then have to turn on the video. And I'm like, I'm just thinking of this. Like, this is not the same thing. I mean, if you leave the room, you excuse yourself and you come back, people can figure out you had to go to the bathroom. I mean, it's not like, you know, it's such a different medium.
It is. I agree.
And if you're a public figure, this medium is actually a whole different kind of challenges because we're aware of optics all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And this sounds like a very silly, but it really is because people were like, oh, he doesn't care. He just left the room. Well, what if I have like three Zoom meetings back to back to back? You know, and I'm trying to accommodate multiple constituents at the same time.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's, you know, when there's lack of information, people fill in the blanks with whatever they think, you know, their reality is, and it's usually not right.
Yeah, and it's much faster as opposed to showing up at one event, I have to drive across the city 20 minutes to get to another event, and I'm, you know, somewhat late, but I get there.
Yeah.
You know, there's, but at least it's different because people recognize the movement of the challenge of moving around, as opposed to, well, you're not going anywhere, you're sitting at home. I mean, the same thing on campaigning and mail-in voting. It's really going to change how we're going to have to.
Oh, yeah. And fundraising too. Yeah, I don't anticipate any huge, you know, function hall fundraisers for a while.
Yeah, sadly, I was able to support local businesses through a fundraiser at home. I will not be conducting a local fundraiser at home this year. You will not see a solicitation from me for people who do donate to watch. I will not see a solicitation from you this year as well. I did not do it last year. I will not do it this year.
Mm-hmm.
And, hopefully, when we get to a, you know, more normality, you know, I'll maybe hold a couple of fundraising events at some regular venues that use it at large, if no other reason, to try to, you know, throw a couple of dollars, so to speak, into helping out a local business.
Sure.
Obviously, the goal is to make money, but also there's another way that you actually help business out by, you know, fundraisers are great for businesses because it gives a business a chance to introduce themselves to customers they don't know.
Oh, yeah. Yep, and helps the employees in that business, and definitely, it's a part of the economy for sure.
Yeah, so fundraising venues, you know, would it be a restaurant or a bar or, you know, an outdoor venue or a catering service, you know, gives them a chance to see all these folks that would never normally come to your business.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when I hold an event, you know, I'm hoping, you know, that people will be like, okay, I like this restaurant you just did.
Mm-hmm.
We'll come back here on my own another day.
Yep.
Absolutely. You know, I've had that happen before. I mean, people are like, oh, this is great. Never knew this was here. I'm like, okay, well, come back.
Now you know. Yeah, that's right.
So, I mean, once I get through pandemic, you know, into another cycle of fundraising, I'll start thinking about, you know, if I'm willing to do mobile fundraisers and maybe, you know, the goal is to make money, obviously, but to try to see, you know, ways of helping out in that way. You know, I cannot use my campaign account just to buy, like, a whole bunch of food and leave it at the house. I mean, that's a violation.
Right.
You know, obviously we made donations to the local food pantries, you know, Germantown needed help, QCAP needed help, you know, and others. So, you know, Quisitation Resources is now doing food pantry, food security stuff too. So, I mean, yes. I've been making donations that way, encouraging people to, again, you know, I'm not saying you have to donate to any of those organizations I just
yep.
named.
Yep.
If you have a couple, you know, pennies to spare, you know, consider making a small donation to an organization that you support.
Yeah, they're providing transportation, I know, to some of the mass vaccination sites as well. So they're really reaching out into the community as much as they can.
Absolutely. So, you know, I still know it's tough for everybody right now. Okay, don't get me wrong. I get it. But for those of you that, you know, have a couple of pennies to spare, please consider it. You know, it doesn't matter when you do it, just whenever when you feel like it's appropriate.
Yeah.
But this is what's going to change your pandemic life, right? I mean, you know, even how, you know, these agencies fundraise, you know, they also use the big venues and they can't do it. So, you know, there's no longer the, you know, QCAP Best Chefs Award, which
QCAP. Right. It was a huge event for them. Yeah.
All the festivals, but Quincy Resources is also a fundraiser.
Yep. Interfaith Social Services couldn't do their big holiday gala, you know, absolutely, yep.
Yeah, you can't do the 4K runs or walks together. Golf tournaments can't be done.
Right.
Well, beyond, you know, my fundraising issues and the impact, my little tiny impact have on the economy, you know, all the other, collectively, all the other fundraising organizations and their impact on the local economy is also significant too.
Sure.
Being able to donating to them, they, you know, they also, as a result, you know, need to use these other venues and pay other venues their, all the services, which then helps the economy. So as I keep trying to remind people at the State House, the not-for-profits is part of an essential part of our economy, and we can't forget about them as we keep moving on economic development post-COVID.
Money is money, right?
Money is money, and there's, you know, other than a very small number of sectors, everybody is having a hard time. You know, I do know that Amazon, we all know Amazon's doing wonderful, but most of us aren't Amazon.
That's right. Yeah.
So, I mean, life is changing. Mailing ballots, how are we going to do fundraising, how we outreach to folks, how we
communicate. Next time we talk, we're going to have to talk about how the state's going to get back the gajillions of dollars that it lost in unemployment and fraud. I saved that for last, Jackie. But we'll talk about that next week.
Cybercrime. We want to talk about cybercrime next week.
Yeah. Okay. That sounds good. your phone number, your email, if you could.
Yeah, 617-722-2014. 617-722-2014. Hit anybody. Again, do not be picky which staffer you want to contact my office. Just pick anyone. And we'll collect the voicemails. The voicemails are emailed to the staff, which then will listen to the staff emails and send them to me, and we'll listen to them. And someone will get back to with the appropriate person in the office doing what your request is. Tacky.chan@mahouse.gov, tacky.chan@mahouse.gov. Emails are picking up now. I keep giving you like an email check. It's kind of funny how I'm doing this now. I'll give you an idea how much email I'm getting. But yeah, I'm floating in about closing in 50 to 75 emails a day now.
Wow.
So be forewarned again that if you have a personal issue that's a crisis, you know, I do have to sift through and get to your email. If you're writing about policies issues, I am reading them. I do read your policies issues. But the volume, I mean, this is the nature of the business. Emails change how things work. It's no longer postcards coming in the mail that I used to read. So my Facebook, State Representative Tacky Chan, does have a lot of stuff we post on information going on, as well as tackychan.org, which is my official website for state business.
Mm-hmm.
You can go there and maybe bypass, contact me at all if you can find the answer either on the social media page or the website page that we keep posting stuff, including the show that we do, that sometimes we have something useful to tell you.
But at least we have fun along the way.
Well, I mean, running gag is right now, how long can my hair grow?
I can still see your eyes, so.
We'll get the hairbrush next time. I'll brush it straight down. You can see how much when I pat, mat it down, what it looks like.
I look forward to that. Okay.
But I mean, not like I want everybody to watch my show because they want to watch the hair. I mean, it's really worth two of us talking. But most importantly, the gives an idea how information keeps changing over time.
Yeah, yeah. All righty. It'll be March, too, next time we talk. So that's something to look forward to.
Yeah. Hopefully no more snow. Maybe a little bit of a March surprise. Maybe a spring period. But, you know, thankfully, it's been not too brutal a snow period. And I'll be happy to get on my outdoor walks like everybody else wants to get outside and do some outdoor walks.
So, yes, absolutely. Yeah.
You know, so see you in a week.
Sounds good. All right. Thanks, Tacky. Be well.
You too. Take care.